Hi, Dan.
Hello.
I was I called you late because I was editing, and you lose track of time when you're editing things.
That's true. Are you words, audio?
Audio, podcast.
Yeah, that happens. You get sucked into those.
Yeah, you're not looking at the clock when you're doing that.
Keep watching the clock, Jason. Keep watching the clock.
Well, and I'm doing this the Incomparable album draft, and so it's extra complicated because I want to put in musical clips when people pick their favorite albums. So that adds a challenge.
That sounds like a nightmare.
That adds a challenge. Well, the real nightmare is then people don't like the parts that you picked and the songs that you picked, and they send you files of the right things for you to put in the podcast for them. So, which is nice that they sent me files. That actually makes my job easier, but it's a complicated project. So I was kind of in there picking apart the really hard ones are the music that I've never heard before and I don't like, because then I don't even know what to pick, because it's all just noise to me, whether that's super loud screaming heavy metal noise or even like classical music or opera noise. It's just like, I don't even know how to judge this, so I sort of take something that sounds okay and put it in.
Well,
it's weird.
Because it's a highly taste-based thing, right? So you don't know what triggers that reaction in the people who are suggesting it. Clearly they have an emotional resonance with it, but
you need to make them
edit that part of it.
Yeah,
or just send you this section, I guess.
If you don't feel it, then it's harder to express what they're feeling with the clips. So yeah, anyway, so that's why I was late, but you know, podcasting is never late, so Here's the podcast. Hey, why is slowness killing the Apple Watch, Dan? You wrote that piece on Six Colors this week.
And I was just responding just now to some feedback from it, both on via email and on Twitter, with people saying maybe this is a third party app's problem. Maybe this is an issue you just had with this particular app, in this case, Pedometer Plus Plus. And I said, I feel like it's been pretty across the board for me in terms of having poor responsiveness from not only apps on the Apple Watch, both first and third party, but the complications, especially that they had with watchOS 2 for third parties. I found it frustrating because if you have stuff that has frequently updating information, for example, your step count, right, which is pretty much constantly updating, that it's just not built for that, or it doesn't quite support that.
Yeah, it's disappointing too, because I've seen the same thing happen. So, the idea that the Apple Watch is not, it's not just slow to launch apps and things like that, but the data on it is inappropriately stale. And
yes,
I've seen that. So I use the Weather Underground complication. And one of the nice things about it is that my home weather station's on Weather Underground. So I can actually see the temperature. You know, it's not like so when I ask my iPhone or Amazon Echo even what the temperature is, it's totally wrong. Like, what's the weather like? And it'll say, oh, it's 58 degrees and it's like 64. But
because it's like 2 miles away from where you are.
And
at least
in Bay Area, it's weird. So it's like, you know, it's the Sausalito weather or something like that. So, but I've got a weather station in my backyard and it's on the internet, and there are apps that query that weather station, which is great. But whenever I look at the Weather Underground complication, it's totally wrong. And then I tap on it to load the app, and the app spins for like 30 seconds or a minute, and then it shows me the right temperature, and then when I go back to the face, it's got the right temperature.
Right. And you know, the central sort of premise of that article I wrote is that it wouldn't be so bad if it were slow and wrong if it weren't for the fact that it's a device predicated on the ability to get quick access to information.
Exactly.
So, you know, in the case that it's almost always faster to pull out your phone and check these things, I sort of drew a comparison between, you know, presume at a certain point wristwatches overtook pocket watches because it was so much easier and quicker to glance at your wrist, especially as I found for, it sounded like military adoption came up a lot, because if you're riding on horseback, you don't want to like pull out your pocket watch and be like, what time is it? Or when did those military maneuvers supposed to happen? So having a device that, you know, is predicated on the idea of having quick information always at a glance, I think is it's disappointing when that not only doesn't come to play, but is so egregiously bad at it.
Yeah, and this is something that I've seen on all the, you know, all sorts of watch complications. I don't know what the answer is. I don't think it's just like the developer's fault. I think that this is something inherent in the operating system, and it's really disappointing that watchOS 2 didn't address this better, because it needs to be if it's going to be, especially when its face is not on until you flip your wrist to look at it, which I've internalized the wrist flip. It's fine. But while it's sitting there on my wrist, not on, just kind of bubbling around, it needs to do data refreshes for the things, especially like a complication on the face, currently on the face, that needs to be refreshed so that it doesn't need to be every minute, but even if it's every 15 minutes, it needs to be fresh enough so that when I, on a whim, flip my wrist over to look at my Apple Watch, the data on it is reasonably current, and it's not. And, you know, and then that goes hand in hand with the next problem, which is they still have this issue where things don't load reliably. Like, I've gotten better at using Siri on the watch, but there are still, and it's gotten better than it was in the first version of watchOS, but there are still times when I will hold down the button and it just doesn't trigger for a while. Yeah, and
I've spoken to it and had it not respond.
Yeah.
Here's the central comparison I made to. If you bought a regular old watch that you, when you lifted it up to look at it, it took like 3 or 4 seconds for it to actually report the current time, you would not wear that watch. You would never buy a watch that took like that, you know, showed you the wrong time, right? Like, at least on purpose. So why would you buy a smartwatch that doesn't show you consistent data for other stuff? It seems crazy to me. I can't even fathom why you would do that, because it just seems ridiculous. Like, here, oh, hey, there's this really great device that keeps you updated on all this information. It doesn't just show you the time. It shows you all this other stuff. And when that information is incorrect or not helpful, why would you do that? Why would you have that device?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, I wear my, you know, some people in our circles have done the thing that's unsurprising, which is buy it because it's a new Apple product, use it for a while, and then, like, over the course of a year, they just sort of fall out of love with it. It turns out they don't use it like they thought they would, and they've turned away from it. I'm not one of those people. I use it every day, and I like it, but you absolutely hit on one of the places where it doesn't work right. And I don't know whether this hardware is just not powerful enough or whether this is a lack of software refinement that needs to be. I'm okay. I mean, I think the overall picture, I'd be interested in what you think about this. I think the overall picture goes back to that day that we all sat at the Flint Center in 2014, and as Macworld employees, no less, for the last day, and watched the presentation of the Apple Watch, and it was colossally unfocused. It was the most unfocused Apple presentation I've ever seen. It was like, instead of saying, here's what this does, like the iPhone does three things, right? Famously that Steve Jobs said, the Apple Watch was like, well, what doesn't it do? It does a billion things. And I think it suffers because of that. I'd almost rather watch OS 3. I mean, they're a little trapped now, but I'd almost rather watch OS 3 pare things down a little bit and be like, we're going to focus on these five things or these three things and make those a lot better. And some of the other stuff's going to fall by the wayside, and do a rethink, because I would hate it if they thought, well, we can't change now because we've had this watch out there for a year. I think they need to take the year's worth and be like, oh, that friends button is kind of dumb and the app model doesn't really work. Let's rethink the Apple Watch. And I hope they do, because I think they should.
I think it suffers from the exact opposite approach that Apple usually uses, which is let's roll something out that doesn't do everything and then let's build all those additional, let's iterate, right, and improve all those things. And instead, they went in whole hog, and you're totally right. It felt like, I remember watching that presentation and sort of looking over the rest of you guys and being like, this is like it's like everything in the kitchen sink, right? Like, it was almost like, it reminded me of, there's a Saturday Night Live, they make those mock commercials, and there's one from several years ago where they're talking about, it's like a fake food commercial, and they keep adding like, oh, it's a chocolate waffle, put on a slice of pizza, rolled in a burrito, right? Like, they just keep going for like 5 minutes. And that's kind of what this feels like. It's just, it's, oh, you want apps? We'll do apps. You want fitness? We'll do fitness. Like, we'll do literally everything. And the answer is maybe that was too much, because I don't think we're yet at the stage where people, let's put it this way. No one's going to replace their iPhone with an Apple Watch if such a thing was even possible right now, right? Like, it's just, and yet that's what they did, is they tried to make essentially a clone of an iPhone that you wear on your wrist.
Yeah.
And that was, I think that was the wrong approach. I think there's a point down the line where so you might make a device so capable that's like, oh man, maybe you really don't need to bring your iPhone every time you go out, right? Like if you go for a run or if you go for, you know, just down to the corner store, like maybe you don't even need your iPhone because you can do everything you need with your Apple Watch. But that was going to be after years of development and iteration and improving this device. And it's massively unfocused. It suffers from terrible feature creep where it's just like, let's just throw in everything. And its performance is bad. I took a screenshot that I meant to put in that post, which is the timer app, which I use quite a lot for when I'm like brewing tea or whatever. And half the time when I open it, it's entirely blank.
Yes.
Like there's empty boxes and you sit there and wait for about 5 seconds for the numbers to kick on.
Uh-huh.
And
oh,
you're
yeah,
like,
me too.
What would I in that time, there are like six other timers in my house I could have used. So I would guess that the compromises that have to be made in order to preserve both the battery life, which is actually pretty good. I run out of battery on my phone way faster than I run out of battery on my watch.
Yeah.
And to get a processor in that space were just too much. So, you know, if this had just been the watch face and notifications, you know, I think some people would have been underwhelmed by it, but I think it might have worked better.
Yeah, and that's when I talk about rethinking it, that's sort of what I think is... You know, again, we are not inside Apple, and there are a lot of complicated things. But if I was to spitball a little bit about what they might do with this, and I'm always hesitant to redesign somebody's product for them, because I appreciate that it's a hard situation for them. But if I were to spitball the Apple Watch, you know, watchOS 3 interface, it's like I would take away the app launcher. I would take away that friends screen.
Oh, yeah.
I would probably change the interface so that you've got the glances that you can swipe up to see, and then you can't, and then you've got nothing left and right. And I keep thinking, like, there's probably something there that's more like another watch face screen that's just complications. I started to think, now that you can do custom complications, I've started to wonder, maybe what you should do is that watch apps are launched from their complications, and that when you swipe, you are seeing more data from the complications that you
almost like
use.
almost like the today pane or something.
Yeah, and if you want an alphabetical list somewhere, you can do that. But what I don't like, the cute little launch app screen is very hard to navigate. Those little tiny icons and tap on the right one. I think it's kind of a mistake. I don't think the friends thing is useful either. So you repurpose that a little bit. But I wonder about with between glances and complications, if you could get most of the way there. And I'm okay with the idea that there are apps that can launch, especially if you can make the performance better. But I feel like the fundamental thing this thing needs to do is show you data when you look at it, or show you maybe more data when you swipe one time, and then you can interact with that data by launching an app. So way simpler than it is now. And if I could never launch an app because glances and complications were powerful enough that I didn't need to fully launch an app and sit there and wait, that would be even better, even if it's actually running in the background, just because there's too many states, there's too many places you can be in this little tiny device. It doesn't need to have a geography of like eight different places to go. I'd like it to be maybe five or three or two.
Yeah, and I think I wrote a post about this sometime last year, I think, about redesigning the glances interface, because I actually think the friends interface is fine. It's just what it does is not something I need. So having even a rotary dial of that, which was actually like depending on which little dot you hover over, it shows you different information from that app, I'd be totally cool with that. Like, that seems perfectly logical. It uses the crown to good effect.
The crown,
And it's like, great, I'm set with that. But the idea of, when do you ever use that to talk to anybody? Never.
Never.
Never. You either use Siri or you respond to a text that has come in, or email or whatever, right? Like, I'm not starting conversations from my Apple Watch.
No.
Sorry. That's not a use case that makes any sense to me. In the same way that if I'm sitting there texting on my iPhone, or like typing in Slack or something, I, you know, had this experience this morning where I woke up and like had a Slack message that was a question, and I was like, oh, this is a really involved thing. I'm not going to sit here and type out like 16 messages on my iPhone right now because I'm lying in bed. I'm going to get up and wait until I'm at a computer with an actual keyboard.
Yeah,
it's fine. Also, I can type.
Slack's watch app is also lousy in that it doesn't let you do a quick response, which is too bad. And that's, you know, there are other apps that do a better job of that. Slack is not one of them. But it's not an initiation kind of device, nor should it be. No, it's glances and quick action.
Yeah, and so I'm curious, like you, I'm curious to see what becomes of the Apple Watch in the next iteration, because they're not going to give up on it, I don't think. But it does need some serious rethinking. If, in fact, the holiday sales, there were some reports going around this week that the holiday sales were disappointing. Obviously, it's hard to know because they don't break that out.
Right.
And they're always going to be bullish about it on the financial calls. But I would guess it probably didn't do as well as they hoped. There were really deep discounts on the Apple Watch and continue to be right now, which is not the kind of thing you traditionally see on Apple products. So I am not going to be surprised if there is some significant rethinking.
Yeah.
But I hope that it's really, you know, part of me hopes, hey, look, it's a first generation device with an incredibly small microprocessor. That's going to have gotten better in the last year. They're going to have gotten to figure out a way to put more powerful chip in there, and that might make a lot of difference. But you know, there is something that needs to happen where they need to go back to the drawing board on watchOS 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's not just, what we're not saying is if this was faster, like processor-wise, it would solve all the problems with the Apple Watch. Part of the problem with the Apple Watch is, you know, I'm sure some of it could be done by hardware, getting it to wake up better, more battery efficient, mm-hmm. more power efficient.
Faster networking.
I'm sure all of that could help, but I don't think, I think there's a very clear metaphor problem on the Apple Watch that also needs to get handled. So I think the real question, if you're an existing Apple Watch owner, is if they do a watchOS 3 for the fall, one of the questions is going to be, what will the current watch hardware support? And will it be rethought? I would think that it would be, but, you know, because it would be awful for them to have sold all of these watches and then suddenly say, yeah, we're completely rethinking how the watch works, but not your watch. Your watch is just going to stay the way it is now. That would be,
right. You
know, software. That is the power of software, is to help, you know, change a product after it's already launched. So I hope they do that regardless of releasing a new watch. I'm sure the new watch, I mean, yeah, remember the original of anything, right?
It always
gets better, and we will marvel in 5 years at how much better the Apple watches are than today's model. I'm happy with mine. I wear it every day. I'm happy to wear it. I think it could be better, but I'm also not one of these people who's like, well, forget it. I'm just going to go wear a fitness tracker, or I'm just going to wear a mechanical watch. I am happy to have it, but I do think it could be a lot better.
Yeah, and I'm in that position of people do still ask me a lot about it when they see me wearing it, you know, and I think my response has become increasingly muted over the last year, going from like, oh yeah, it's good, I really like it, to, well, you know, it's okay if you're in that sort of thing, to, unless you're really into technology, it's probably not something that you're going to want. Sorry. So that makes me a little bummed out, because I do think that there's a lot of potential there. But at the moment, it's not a device that I would really recommend most people buy.
Yeah, it's in flux right now, I would say. It's fun to have it, but it needs work, and it's unclear what it's going to be like. And there probably will be a new one in the fall, because that will be 2 years since it was announced. Come fall, it was announced a year and a half ago, and although it only shipped a year ago, you know, they've probably gone a long way since then. But boy, I hope they're rethinking some of the OS stuff, because this is perfect. Like they got to see regular people use it for a year.
Yep.
They probably have like so much, and it's a new class of device. They probably have so much more understanding of how people use this device than they did, you know, when they released it. So that's good. That's good. I hope they act on it, because I do think it could be a lot better.
So here's a question for you. I actually don't think we've written about this on the site, but this is more of a semantic or philosophical question. If a 9.7 inch iPad is not an iPad Air, but a new version of the iPad Pro, is it an iPad Pro Mini? I saw somebody commenting online like, oh, I don't want a 9.7 inch iPad Pro. I'm like, I want an iPad Air. Someone said, I want a 9.7-inch iPad Pro. I want an iPad Air 4 or whatever, 3. I don't remember where we're at. And I was like, what is the actual difference between those two?
A rose things? By any other name would smell as sweet, Dan. I think the difference would be if
thank
they call
you,
the, new iPad Air the iPad Pro 10-inch that with the smart connector and the Apple Pen support or Apple Pencil support that it's still the same thing.
It's the same product.
I'm baffled by that rumor. Because
it's really weird.
I don't understand why you would call it Pro if your mainstream iPad is that iPad and there's no other iPad. Why wouldn't you call them all iPad at that point?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the next thing I was thinking is like maybe this just goes back to being the iPad, right? Like you got the iPad Mini, the iPad, and the iPad Pro. Fine,
and then next,
I have no problem
and then
with
next
that.
Year, if they want to make it the iPad Pro instead, just the 13-inch iPad. That I'm actually cool with that. I'm okay with them to just call it iPad and differentiate by size. But I don't understand why you add Pro when there's no other iPad. I mean, even if you keep the iPad Air 2 around in the price list, why would you need to differentiate it? I'm a little baffled by it. Also because I think the idea of a Pro iPad is a little bit silly anyway. It's an iPad. It gets used in all sorts of ways. I think Pro as nomenclature is a little bit silly. I think it's silly on the MacBook Pro too, but at least there's a MacBook.
Clearly why they're doing it. Right. Yeah. That makes sense to me, right? If they were trying to mimic that lineup by having an iPad.
Two distinct kinds of iPad, right?
Sure.
But
that's
I don't see how this rumor about the iPad Air 3 being called the iPad Pro 10-inch makes sense because it doesn't seem like there's room in the iPad line for two totally different classes of iPad unless they're just going to kind of rebrand their old slow iPads as regular iPad, but it doesn't follow.
I think what they're trying to do is get rid of the Air name, and I think that's going to happen on the MacBook side as well.
Do
it. Right? Because it was always weird, and so having the MacBook and the MacBook Pro and the iPad Pro, okay, we'll leave aside the iPad Mini for the moment, okay, fine, whatever. You're just saying it's a bigger model, right? You know, there's really, I agree with you that Pro is kind of a misleading thing. God, I sometimes still miss the PowerBook. What a great name. The PowerPad. How about that? That sounds terrible. Don't use that, Apple. But I do think they used to have a very simple product grid, right? And that's of course gotten more and more complex over the years. So I don't entirely understand, as you do, why they would do that. I assume that it's just rebranding. They're going to bring the features from the Pro to the iPad, the 9.7-inch iPad, for lack of a better name. And what they call it is kind of immaterial. So it's weird.
Simplifying is good. I do think, I mean, we probably agree. I keep thinking that ultimately the MacBook will be all that's left and that there'll be, at some point, the MacBook Pro gets so thin anyway that why would you not just call it all MacBook? And say we've got the 12 and 15 MacBook. But I could see a Pro line difference there because just in the PC industry, there are Pro class processors and the MacBook doesn't have them. It's using the Core M, right? So it's a very low powered processor. So at least there's some differentiation there. I fail to see how the iPad is ever going to get that differentiated where, you know, I think simplifying it all to iPad makes a lot of sense to me. It's just iPad and it comes in different sizes and that makes sense. So why would you stack a name like Pro on it? I would much rather they introduce the new iPad Air 3 and just call it, again, the new iPad.
The classic. The new iPad. yes, that is a product line that has basically had problems ever since the iPad. I mean, the iPad, fine. iPad 2, then they went insane.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well,
they don't
we'll
want to keep counting
there.
It up. They don't want to keep counting it up.
No,
I get that. The iPad 5, iPad 7 is a little silly, but you know,
they've done
iPad
it with the
Air,
phone. I mean, we're going to have an iPhone 7 in the fall, most likely.
Yeah, and an iPhone SE in a few weeks, possibly, too. So
I always thought that was going to be a problem with the iPhone, too, because once you hit the iPhone 12 or something like that, it does start to get to be pretty ridiculous. So I would not be surprised. They've bought themselves time by having the TikTok cycle.
Yeah.
So they can, every year, they can do so they cut them out the amount of time that, like even when you just reach double digits, I feel like, is going to be, I don't know, seems weird. But then again, we're on 10.11 point. So, you know,
I saw a rumor
about
OS 10, 10.12, and I was like, oh, please no.
just, I mean, if you're going to rebrand it macOS anyways.
Yeah, macOS 11. I'm really hoping for macOS 11.
It's time. It's time. Move along. You know, we've had 10 versions. We've gone 10, you know, none of the OS, you know, macOS 1 through 9 had more than, you know, 5 or 6 point releases, I think.
Yeah, let me put it this way. macOS 10 has been 10 longer than my daughter has been alive, and she's in high school.
Yeah, it's a long time. So maybe it's time to rebrand, and especially now that you've got iOS and TVOS and WatchOS, and I know you wrote something about this a few months ago.
Yes. Many times I've been banging that drum, yep.
Hey, I agree. I bet with the Rebound guys that it would be lowercase macOS, I think, a year or two ago. So
I
still think it'll happen.
It'll be macOS 11. This is what I'm going to hope for. I'm not saying I'm betting on it, but I'm hoping that at WWDC they will announce iOS 10, macOS 11, and watchOS 3, and tvOS 10, I guess, because they've synced that one up. Yeah.
macOS 11. It's only 1 year older than iOS 10.
Yeah, it's totally
perfect sense.
These go to 11.
Speaking of macOS, though, I want to know the other report that was going around this week is Siri on the Mac.
Yeah.
I've been banging that drum. And in fact, I don't know if this podcast will come out before my Macworld column this week, but my Macworld column this week is about Siri on the Mac. And I'm interested in this. I think that, like you, I have fears about what Apple will choose to do with this, and my worry is that they'll basically just be like, oh, just shove Siri on the Mac. And it's like, okay, that's fine, but you really need to start thinking about pushing this envelope a little bit. And there are some challenges, too. Exactly. You're dealing with a computer that has huge amounts of resources, no limits, you know, much larger RAM ceilings, much more hard drive space, much more processing power.
Access to Automator, access to scripting, always on
Wi-Fi, and most importantly, always plugged in if you're talking about an iMac, right? And even on a MacBook, I feel like your battery's pretty good. It's much better than an iPhone. We're not quite as worried about burning through power as we are on our iPhone. And so think about this as a great opportunity to open up Siri and do a lot more stuff with it and possibly make it not only more powerful, but like maybe this is the time to let third parties start playing around with doing plugins. Maybe it's a time for scripting, as you said. Like there's a lot of potential here in putting Siri on the desktop platform, as I think Microsoft has, you know, found with the Cortana stuff they've been trying to do. My biggest concern on the hardware front is that most of these devices, these Macs, the microphone support is not always great. So I worry a little bit about, you know, I love my Amazon Echo. I know you have one too now.
I do.
And so it's good at hearing you when you're far away because it has this like really tuned array of speakers. It's got like seven microphones in it. And it's really tuned for noise cancellation and hearing you when you're far away and all that stuff. The internal microphone on most Macs is nothing to write home about.
No, but it'll work. So it'll work.
It should be okay. It probably won't be as good in situations with background noise.
No.
Because it doesn't have the good noise cancellation. Like most, you know, the iPhone's got two mics on it for that reason, I would assume. And the Macs can do with their internal mics some form of ambient noise reduction, but how often do you really want to hear somebody's internal microphone on a podcast, for example? It's not super great quality. So there might be some challenges. I don't think it will necessarily be quite as responsive as the Echo, but that said, there's a lot more horsepower behind it, and I think that opens up some awesome possibilities.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by it, but I share your fear that it's going to end up being a closed system that replicates what we see Siri do on iOS and nothing more. And, you know, it'll display a little window or pop something out of Notification Center, but will it be able to go beyond what we can do on these mobile devices since it's a more capable device? I think that's the big mystery, because I would really love to be able to, the idea of being able to build an information source in a script or have it run a script or something like that that could be very interesting to be able to do that, but you'd need to actually do that, right? So
yeah,
we'll see. Well, okay, we should probably stop there. It's been about a half an hour, and we'll be back again next week, maybe earlier than Friday. I was going to call you yesterday, and my dog got sprayed by a skunk, and I spent all yesterday doing nothing but washing my dog and washing all the things in my house to try and get the stink out. The stink is not out, but it is slowly fading away. But anyway, yesterday was ruined, so we didn't talk then.
That's all right. I saw a skunk run across the street the other night as I walked home, so hopefully it wasn't the same one.
Oh, man. Well, it's funny. I talked to a couple of my neighbors. I posted on Facebook that we got sprayed by a skunk. I mean, the dog got sprayed right in the face by this poor dog. People in my neighborhood are like, oh, yeah, we smelled that. I'm like, yes, I'm sure you did. And one of my neighbors said, oh, yeah, we had a skunk in our yard last night, too. And I said, yes, that would be this one. That's the one that got us.
We've identified them.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, we'll try to do it sooner. And hopefully we'll get some more detail very soon about this Apple event that's supposed to happen. There was a story that it was going to happen on March 15th. There was another rumor that it was maybe pushed back to the 22nd. I've also heard the possibility that it could have been the 14th or the 21st, the Monday instead of the Tuesday. It's all a little mysterious. And that doesn't necessarily mean like the rumor people are wrong. It's also possible that Apple has decided to change the event date. I think given all the Apple FBI stuff too, I wonder if Apple
might move stuff around.
Is recalibrating what kind of public presence they want to have while this thing is on fire, in case they want to like wait a little bit and have some better timing. So
releasing a new iPhone right in the middle of this, especially one with the 5 nomenclature on it, that could be exciting.
Yeah, interesting optics there. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll have more about that next week. But until then, thanks to everybody out there for listening and for subscribing to Six Colors. We really appreciate it. This is a big help in allowing us to do what we do for a living, not just the special secret stuff for you guys, but also the stuff we do for everybody on the site. So thanks again. And spread the word about the Secret Podcast if you like it. If you've got friends who haven't subscribed to Six Colors, they could do that, and then they can listen to the Secret Podcast. Like you. All right. All right, Dan. Nice talking to you.
Bye, Jason.
Bye.